You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
There's a turd in Saturday. You can't go there.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. Welcome to Midnight Chats and episode 92. Here with James Acaster as tonight's guest. This is an episode that I recorded a few weeks ago, actually. Actually, maybe more than that, because it was before quarantine. It was before the lockdown and coronavirus had really taken a hold. So, yeah, it was of a freer time when I met James, and we met up to discuss a new podcast. It would have launched by now. It's been a little bit delayed, but it is coming now on the 24th of April. James Acaster's Perfect Sounds. It is a podcast version of his book that you might be aware of, which was called Perfect Sound Whatever, and that was a book of his favourite albums from the year 2016. There's a whole story about why 2016, which we get into a little bit in this podcast. To fill you in on that, James had a really terrible 2017, which happened from the very beginning of the year, when in January he was dumped by his girlfriend. So to get over this heartbreak, and there were some other things going on in his career, I believe, he went and listened to all the new music that he could find on those end of year lists that were still floating around from 2016. And he became completely obsessed by the music on these lists. He has bought now to date, at this point in time, he has bought over 600 albums from the year 2016. And he's written the book about it, and now he's making this podcast about it, which, as I say, starts on the 24th of April on the BBC Sounds app. I'm sure you know loads of James's work. He's got an incredible Netflix special. If you've not seen that, I'd really recommend it. It's like a three-parter. It's incredible. It's very clever, very smart stand-up comedy. And he has his own podcast, as well as this new one, which he hosts with Ed Gamble, the comedian Ed Gamble, which is where we start the conversation. I've put a load of links in the description of this podcast, because there's a hell of a lot of music that he talks about, loads of stuff, loads of obscure things, and I've just included a few of those. That's all you need to know. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sticking with Midnight Chats during these strange times. Hopefully it's keeping you company. There's plenty there if you've not listened to all of them. Some of them are better than others, that's for sure. I feel like we've got better as time goes on. There'll be another one next week, and then we'll see how it goes. Hopefully we'll get some more together soon. But in the meantime, if you do want to support us in any way, the best way to do that is to just give a donation at loudandquiet.com/subscribe. It can be for any amount. If now is a bad time for that, that's completely fine. Just ignore that. Enjoy this podcast. But that is the way that you can support us if you would like to. In the meantime, this is James Acaster on Midnight Chat number 92. You would have been told this fact today, I'm sure. But we're currently in the basement of a restaurant, but this used to be the live lounge.
Yes.
For Radio
yes.
1.
So it's pretty mad to think about it, actually. But yeah, it's a restaurant now and called Caravan. And downstairs, yeah, this was the live lounge, and they sold it to Caravan, and then they still let us come in here and record if we want to, so that's pretty good.
We're here to talk about a new podcast, but your podcast you do with Ed,
yes,
Off Menu.
Mm-hmm.
What's the setup like? Do you, I'm guessing you don't record that in the basement of Caravan.
We don't go to the live lounge to do that. No, we just record it wherever we can, sometimes wherever is best for the guests, and the setting is always the same, which is the Dream Restaurant. So wherever we are, we just set it in the guests' dream setting for a meal.
You've done like 50 odd of those now, right?
Done a lot, yeah. A lot. Approaching 50, yeah, definitely.
It seems to be going very well.
It's been really fun. I'm really glad that, you start off a podcast like that because it's a conversation that you have with your mate all the time. And so you're like, well, let's do a podcast about it now because we're always talking about what our favourite dishes are that we've ever had anywhere. So why don't we just do it? If we're having that conversation, may as well continue to have it and record it. And you don't expect anyone else to listen to it. And it's really nice when they do.
Everyone seems to get into it.
Yeah.
That you've had, from the ones I've listened to, everyone's like up for it. Have you had anyone who's like maybe not been as keen to go with it?
One episode that hasn't come out yet that is coming out, I don't think in this series, but maybe in the next series, where I clash with the guest in a way that is unanticipated and so apparent and obvious that's why I'm fine saying it, because people will, when you get to the episode, you'll know which one it is. And it's not that they don't go with the episode. They're actually more than happy to talk about food, but they're not happy to go with me.
Right, okay.
Who is a
young... Is this someone that you...
I've never met him before.
You've not met him before?
No.
Okay, it's not an old buddy.
He did not really get why I was pretending to be a genie and pretending to be a waiter. And he did not understand what my sense of humour was. And so very much he buddied up with Ed on that. And they were friends, and I was... my confidence evaporates almost instantly, and then even more so as the episode goes on. So it'll be very obvious which one that is.
Okay, and that's coming up soon, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Well, it's coming out in, I think, maybe the fourth series.
Okay.
We're on the third series as we speak now. I don't think it's in this series. I think it's going to be in the next
one. All right.
We've recorded a lot in advance.
I'm not even going to ask you who it is. I'm going to...
No, I think it's more fun.
It's more fun to just find it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And absolutely know.
Yeah.
Because it must be apparent.
It's so obvious. Like, don't... If it isn't the one and you're unsure, I think, oh, maybe it's that one. It's not that one. That one was fine. And it's just you thinking that I had more of an awkward time than I did. But it's very obvious which one it is.
There's that podcast, but you're about to launch this new podcast, which is essentially why we're here.
Yes.
It's like the podcast version of your book, which was called Perfect Sounds Whatever.
Yes.
Podcast has dropped the whatever, isn't it? It's just Perfect Sounds. Is that right?
So the book's called Perfect Sound Whatever, and the podcast is called Perfect Sounds. James Acaster's Perfect Sounds. And it's all about me deciding that 2016 is the greatest year for music of all time. And I decide that because I become obsessed with it. Because in 2017, I have a bad personal year. And I deal with that by obsessively buying music from the previous year, 2016. And I now own over 600 albums that came out that year. And so I can't deny it's the greatest year for music of all time.
So it has to be.
Well, I just found the most amount of albums that I like. There's no other year in history where I have that many albums that I love.
Yeah.
And like, you know, there's like all the albums I've bought, I like them. But then there's, you know, hundreds that I love within that. And so you can't then go, nah, that's not that. Nah, I'm going to say that 1971 is because everyone else says that. And so I don't want to look stupid. So I'm going to agree with everyone and say, no, yeah, it's 1971 because all those albums came out. When really, I don't listen to those albums. The albums that I love and that I'm most obsessed with, that all came out in one year are the 2016 ones. So yeah. I think that the big message to all music fans, I would say, is stop worrying about other music fans thinking you're cool, because those are not the people who really love music. They don't matter. Ignore those people. They're big on the message boards. They're having a great time on there. Meanwhile, none of them are connecting to anything proper and actually enjoying themselves and getting what you're meant to get out of music, which is a strong personal connection to it. And there's the social connection as well to music, which is great. Being in a room full of people who all like the same band, watching that band live and singing along together feels like church. It's great. And I appreciate that as well. But the dream is the crossover of the two. You've listened to an album, you've connected with it, you've obsessed over it, you go and see that band, everyone's like-minded and the same, and you all sing along. Not academically, just going around the internet going, oh, what's the best year for music? Okay, yeah, it's that one, actually. And saying that with each other. No, no, no. The best is subjective.
I think I should say
favourite, really.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I think you're right. I think not enough people discover new stuff as well.
Yeah.
So you started listening to just contextualize this, that for people that maybe haven't read the book,
yes,
or don't know about this podcast. As you say, 2017 was a bad year.
Yeah, just for me personally.
And it was bad at the beginning, right? Because this is why 2016 happens, because a lot of end of year lists were still around for like the best of 2016.
And they're still there now. I'll tell you that much. They never get erased off the internet. That's the beauty of a project like this. You'll always have the resources there. But yeah, they'd all gone up at the end of 2016. And in 2016, I'd started to pay attention to current music again for like over a decade. I hadn't bothered. No, for about a decade, I'd mainly just, got into, I'd get into new albums, but they were albums from way back when. People were recommending me, going, oh yeah, have you heard, whatever, this album from the 70s, it's a really obscure, weird album. I'll buy those and get into that. But I wrote off modern music. I thought, nothing good's getting made now. And every now and again, I'd, buy something that was current, but it'd have to be really heavily recommended to me. And in 2016, the year kicked off in January with David Bowie dying, Black Star coming out, mm-hmm. and suddenly everyone paid attention to that album and was like, oh my God, this album's amazing. He's talking about death and about being dead, but also musically, he really was pushing himself right to the end. It's a really avant-garde jazz rock album, and it wasn't like stuff he'd done in the past. This is incredible. And so I remember people talking about that, thinking, okay, that sounds cool, but in my cynical brain going like, it's just because he died. That's not the only
still
reason.
No, it's not Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, that's the only reason you guys are saying it, so I kind of ignored it. And then Lemonade came out later on in the year, and it wasn't just hardcore Beyonce fans who were loving that. It was like music snobs were going, no, actually, this is a really properly good album. She's not just done a few singles. The whole album's great, and there's a visual album to go with it. And she's really thought about thematically the whole thing ties together. And all my social media was awash with people going nuts for it. And I was like, oh, I haven't seen this happen in a while with a really mainstream pop artist and everyone going crazy about an album they've done. And then Frank Ocean released Blonde in August. And I remember this. I was hearing that Nish Kumar, a friend of mine, a comedian, was playing it around the flat we were living in at the time. And I assumed, that it was playing Ivy, the second track on the album. And I just thought, what an amazing song. And surely this has just passed me by. It's probably a song from way back when, and I'm, old and I'm out of touch and whatever. And I said to Nish, what's this? He said, it was released today. It's by Frank Ocean. It's his new album. The album's amazing. And then seeing everyone evangelizing about that album online, I was like, maybe I've been wrong about current music and I should engage with it a bit more. So I started to read those end of year lists when, November onwards, they start kind of like slowly. Yeah, in December, there's loads of them. And then in January 2017, where my relationship broke up, I instantly retreated to the most recent thing that had brought me comfort, which was listening to these albums, which was reading those lists, buying new music and listening to those albums. And so I continued to do that until I, the plan was just like, just every time you feel sad, just do that. Pretty much all that year I felt sad. So every single night it was obsessively buying albums, 6 or 7 albums a night sometimes. And, finding the time to listen to them, going back to some more than others. And that kind of, it's gradually got less and less as time has gone on. And the reason for doing it has become different. I'm not going on it every time I feel sad now. If I do it, I'm doing it out of curiosity or because someone's recommended me something. But it just kind of continued even past 2017.
So are you still doing it now?
I found an album last night that I really like. So
did
yeah.
you? What yeah. was it?
It was, I'm going to have to look at this on my phone because I don't know how to pronounce the name. It's a really weird, electronic kind of noisy electronic album with spoken word over the top of it. It's by Emplex, E-M-M-P-L-E-K-Z. It's called Rook to TN-34. And it's this guy...
That's a good title.
Yeah, it's a good title. And it's this weird electronic, like, little soundscapes in the background. It's like... But, like, horrible grumpy noises. And this guy over the top going, there's a turd in Saturday. You can't go there. But, what's it? Unidentified item in the bagging area. And saying stuff like that over the top of it. I was like, absolutely on board for this.
I'm on board for this. Yeah, this sounds
it's great. And it just also a lot of the time it becomes stuff where you go, if I'm buying this much music from one year and an album like that, I can't just ignore that. An album that is like that, and there's a man talking like that over me. You can't go, well, I'm meant to be the foremost, you know, the main number one scholar on 2016 music, but I'll ignore the album where a guy's saying there's no turd in Saturday over the top of a weird electronic little horrible keyboard noise. So yeah, had to buy it.
I mean, and what's your been your policy, I feel I have to ask this, post 2016?
Uh-huh.
Any interest in 2017 to now?
Absolutely. I've bought more music from 2017, 2018, 2019 than I have in any year before 2016.
Okay, how's it stacking up to 2016?
It's not as many.
But I mean, doing quality.
Oh, quality-wise. Well, I guess it's all relative because, like, I've bought less albums from each year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've definitely not exceeded the 100 mark in any of those years since. Probably not even exceeded the 50 mark. But maybe I've been nudging 50 on each year that I bought. But I'd say that each year I've ended up with between, you know, 2 or 5 albums that are going to stay with me for a very long time, and some of them will become my favourites of all time. And, 2016, there's like hundreds of those. But, like, I still think that's more than I was finding each year before. You know, before I did this project, at the end of every year, I wasn't like, I've got a new album that came out this year that is now going to stay with me for ages and become one of my favourite albums. That wasn't happening, so I wasn't looking for anything. And now that I am engaged more, you know, in 2017, I found Hope by Shamir. Amazing album. It's one of my favourite albums ever. In 2018, I was listening to Everything's Fine by Jean Grey and Quelle Chris. That's one of my favourite albums ever, you know? And like, 2019, I'm trying to think about what the album was that I would have said was my favourite one of last year. I mean, I know there was a lot. So this is really going to annoy me because I know I'm going to come away from this and go, why didn't you just say that album, which is clearly your favourite? But there was a lot last year. There was the Clipping album that came out last year. Was like,
oh, the one, really Blood? It. The Blood one?
It was, there existed an addiction to blood. Yeah. And it was like a horrorcore rap album, and that really blew my mind. Yeah.
And did you hear that record from 2016?
I did. I have Splendor and Misery from 2016 and their EP Wriggle that came out in 2016. Mm. So they released two projects. And really like those. I'd say I love They Existed to Blood even more because I think it's like more focused. But I love that they released a concept album in 2016 set in the future about an astronaut who's a slave who escapes the slave ship and flees across the vastness of space and falls in love with the ship that he hijacks, and they have a relationship together. I think it's amazing that they released that album and incorporated like spirituals and stuff into the album as well. There's a lot of great hooks on it. Davy Diggs is an amazing rapper. So that was what got me into that band, was so through that got into, you know, a whole band and continue to follow their career, which is again something I wasn't doing before doing this project. I wasn't following bands' careers as they happen and evolve. I was, you know, going back and finding dead bands and finding what they were up to.
Sure.
Now I can anticipate albums, which is a great feeling.
When you grew up, what were you growing up listening to? Way back.
Well, when I was in primary school, so I got into music pretty early on through going to church and stuff. I'm not religious anymore, but I was raised in a Christian family, and going to church, there was it was like a rock band church, one of those churches.
Yeah. They're like a hip cool church.
Yeah, like a hip cool church, and people are kind of like, you know, pretty breezy Christians.
Yeah.
And I loved watching the band and the drummer especially, and I started learning drums when I was 7. And I remember like first getting into music was like, you know, all the big like popular songs that everyone knows, and that are funny as well. Like, music had to be slightly funny. So, like, Down Under, that Down Under song by Men at Work.
Yeah.
I just found it hilarious. And so I loved it. I loved Rocking All Over the World because the idea of Rocking All Over the World was mad. Like, like, there's this thing about what that would be. Hi Ho Silver Lining, I loved it, you know, and songs like that. Obviously, I loved In the Jungle, The Mighty Jungle, I'm Not Made of Stone. So, like, you know, stuff like that all the time. And then, like, I kind of started in primary school, I was loving just pop music. I really loved whatever was in the charts, you know. I was Aqua, Dr. Jones, and Barbie Girl. Who, not many people would leave with Dr. Jones, but that was my favourite yeah. one of the two.
That's a deep cut yeah, out of the two, isn't it?
For the real Aqua fans. And then, like, heavily into Oasis for a while, heavily into the Spice Girls for their first album, and then heavily not into them immediately after that.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, still see that as a very
what was at the school you went to, what was the thing, because I grew up in yeah. Essex, and the thing that we got really into Oasis was the
yeah
the whole school got into that. You had to like Oasis even if you didn't like Oasis.
Yes,
you know. What was that, were you in were you in step with your friends and the rest of the school?
Not so much. Oasis wasn't yeah I not many people liked Oasis and stuff in my school that I remember. It was more East 17, Spice Girls, all those kind of Peter Andre for a while. Everyone liked Peter Andre, and you know, all the boys had to aspire to have six packs and all this kind of stuff. There was a tuck shop called Flavor in our school, spelt the way Peter Andre spells it, FLAVA. So it's like all that kind of, you know, people were into that kind
God,
of
they
stuff.
they really liked Andre.
People loved Peter Andre for a while. It was like really big. But, like, yeah, outside of that, people weren't really into guitar bands as much.
Okay, yeah.
And things. So I was into Oasis a lot until the... I mean, I basically was into the first two Oasis albums. And then I bought Be Here Now on the day it came out, listened to it once, decided it's the best album I've ever heard, listened to it a second time and was really disappointed.
Yeah. And, didn't it come out the week that Princess Diana died?
Yes.
Or something like that? Which I think the band might blame for the reason it...
Yeah,
I mean, it still sold loads.
Interesting reason to blame. Yeah, because like, I understand if it didn't sell much, that you would blame it on that. But it makes no sense. We're the biggest band in the world and we made no money. I guess because we have a car crash into a swimming pool in the front of our album, people thought that was bad taste because Princess Diana's just died. That'd be fair enough. Yeah. But you sold loads and people said it was shit.
And people said it
so
was
that's
bad.
Not.
Yeah.
That's not because of... That's not that they were listening to it and there was a cloud hanging over us because of the death of Princess Diana.
No.
And then we couldn't enjoy... we could enjoy you know, do you know what I mean? So like it was more that it just wasn't as musically dense and rich and the melodies weren't as memorable as those first two albums. God, it's like everything about them is, you know, is great. There's the rawness of the first album, and the second album, which is the one that I connected to the most at that age, has just got so many memorable songs and hooks on there, and it's executed perfectly. And that third one's just not as much to it. You kind of get it's all surface layer.
Yeah.
And then the next listen, you go, oh, there's nothing really more to it than the initial hook that was on there. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was it. That was it, guys. It wasn't Die. It wasn't Princess Diana.
So when did you start, because you're a drummer, you've drummed in bands.
Mm-hmm.
When did you, what style of band, was that like was your first band like an Oasis-y band?
No, it's like by the time I was in bands, I liked, like, I was reading Kerrang and stuff like that. I really liked metal and punk and grunge especially. I wanted to be in those kind of bands. So like I was like 13, 14 when I started playing in bands with the people in school, and they were all into the same stuff. So we were just covering Smells Like Teen Spirit, Bored by the Deftones, you know, songs like that, Walk by Pantera. And we were doing all those kind of songs. By the time I started writing music in a band, we were doing like new metal for our sins. And it was like all kind of, but we had two guitarists who were very good guitarists. One of which was like a, you know, like a child prodigy who should have gone somewhere, but you know, no one ever really nurtured his talent when they should have. But this kid was like amazing.
What's he doing? Do you know what he's doing now?
No idea what Matthew Butler's doing now. I hope he's doing well. I bet he's still an amazing guitarist. I bet
shredding
he
in like
he'll still be shredding probably in a pub in a rock band, and everyone's like, "I'm sorry, who the fuck is that?" Because why is he here? Like it was just so good. And like,
there's always one kid in the school that's like, was this kid at your school?
It's at my school.
Yeah,
we just had... you know, he won't mind me saying this, bottom set for everything.
Yeah,
and just an incredible guitarist. And it's the failings of the teachers to not go, okay, he needs to do that for a living, because otherwise he's not going to, like, these other things aren't for him, and that's fine. You don't have to be good at maths. You don't have to, like, that doesn't have to be your life. He's better at the guitar than anyone else is at any subject in his year. So we need to nurture that, not just write off music and go, no, well, that's not a proper thing. It is a proper thing. People do it for a living.
Yeah.
So, like, you can easily make it his job and you're not bothering, because at the end of the day, you're not actually very good at your jobs. So, awful stuff. I really hope he has found a way of making that work, but I haven't heard from him. But right. He was just like, we're doing new metal songs, and then suddenly there's this Joe Satriani-style solo just midway through. And everyone would be like, wow, that's different. And that was like, you know.
What was your singer like?
We never settled on a singer.
Okay, right.
Yeah, we
had. Did you all take turns in that case? Or you just.
No, we had different singers.
Okay.
We had a couple of gigs with no singer and about four gigs with different singers. And the longest serving was this guy who just. He would sing really nice in the band practices and then scream on stage. And we were like, can you please just sing nicely like we've asked you to? And he was like, yeah, I'll do it next time. And then he would scream again.
What? Was that just a nerves thing? Like he'd get up there?
I guess it must have been a nerves thing.
The adrenaline maybe?
It must have been a nerves thing that he was like, or that in the moment of doing the gig, it's what made sense to him. Was because he would also like, he'd always put a dress on as well. He had like a floral dress, and he would put that on, which he hadn't run that by us either, but we didn't care as much, because who cares? But yeah. Like, it was like, okay, that's cool. Like, you're doing a bit of a performance there, and you've got a stage outfit, but then just screaming. And it's like, I love screaming as much as the next person in music, as long as it suits the songs. But it really didn't. It really didn't at all.
So when was the last time you drummed? Do you have a kit? Do you play?
Well, I'm weirdly, so in like, I think 5 days' time or something, like 6 days' time, I'm going home to Kettering. I'm getting my old drum kit, which I haven't played in. It's been in its drum cases for 12 years, just gathering dust and nothing's happened to it. I'm going to load it in the car, go back to London, unpack it in the studio, not tune it. And after having not practiced drums in 12 years, I'm going to record drums all day for 2 days. And with an out-of-tune drum kit, with absolutely the rustiest I've ever been.
Is this for a particular reason?
Yes.
Is it a reason you can tell me about?
Yeah, I think so. It's a project I wanted to... I played drums like... So I actually myself released an album in 2016.
Hang on.
So it's the only bit of drumming that I have done since being in bands. But... where there's a load of bands that I used to know from school, and I was a fan of theirs and bought their demos that they would sell at gigs. And they've each got at least one song that I thought, I still think today is an amazing song. And I was like, oh, no one will ever hear these songs, all these bands are broken up now. So in 2016, I got everyone kind of back together almost into the studio. I played drums, but I only got things like, I got each song right once, you know, like everything else was so rusty, I couldn't even play standard drum beats anymore. But we recorded them all again as like indie grunge songs and released this album. So that's the last bit of drumming I've done.
What's that album called?
It's called Luna Dot Raids the Bee... It's called Luna Dot Raids the Bee Pigeon. And it's because it's made up of all the different band names.
Right, okay.
So that I couldn't be bothered to come up with a new band name. So I took one word from each of the old bands and put them together best I could to make a sentence.
And can I hear this? Can people listen to this? It's on Bandcamp.
It's on Bandcamp, and all the money goes to the youth centres where we used to practice as teenagers.
Great.
So we're getting no money from it. It's a pay what you want album, but any money that you do donate to it goes to these youth centres.
Has it got the shredding guitarist?
It hasn't, because it's... songs that were written by bands I wasn't in, bands that I was a fan of, locally. And he's not on it. I've lost contact with him, and he didn't play on it. And it would have been inappropriate to suddenly have a shredding guitar solo on any of these songs. The guitar was mainly done by a comedian friend of mine called Rob Deering, who is a genius guitarist, and I knew I could play him any song, and he could figure out how to do it in a grunge style.
Right.
And I enjoyed that so much. I really loved making that album to a point where I didn't think. I was surprised at how much. I thought I was doing it to get it out of my system. I'm the kind of person who, once I've got an idea to do something, if I don't do it, it's going to really bug me. So I was just doing it to get it out of my system and do it, and then really loved being in the studio with my friends and recording music and it being a fun thing that, you know, had no basis in my career. There wasn't any kind of, like, you know, path to be taken up, any goal with it. It was just doing it for the love of it and doing it with my friends. And so I wanted to do something else like that, but I was like, well, I don't know, you know, anything else that I do musically, I'd have to start from square one. You know, I'd have to start, like, writing original songs, and I'm not good enough to do that. I haven't played drums in ages. My drumming's going to be absolutely shit. I can't do that. And so I thought, well, I'll make that the basis of the album then, and I'll make the fact that I'm completely out of practice and completely I've neglected my... I used to, you know, teach the drums. I was properly... Right. I played for hours a day, and I taught kids the drums as a job, you know. So, like, I'm... And now, in comparison, I'm awful, you know, and I've neglected this talent completely. And I want to do an album that's essentially about that, so that contrasts what happens when you completely neglect something and when you nurture it. So I'm doing... you know, 2 days of awful, of my best. I'm going to try my best. I'm not going to try and do it for a joke sounding shit, but I'm going to deliberately do it on an out of tune drum kit, try to play the best that I possibly can.
Just drums.
Just drums. Cut that into tracks. And then the next week, we're getting a professional drummer in who is one of my heroes, who's going to come in and he's going to tune the drum kit, same drum kit, and then play over the stuff that I've played. And do either accompaniment to what I've done or better versions of what I've done, like proper versions of it. And then we're going to mix it in a way that that kind of showcases both of them and contrasts them both. And then there's some other musicians I've got lined up who are going to do stuff over the top of that afterwards. But the immediate stuff that's happening next week is me and this other drummer.
Okay. Are you allowed to say who the other drummer is? Or is that
Seb Rockford? Who is from Polar Bear.
Oh, yeah.
And all those. He's a jazz drummer.
He's a proper...
one of my heroes.
Can you play jazz drums? Would that be the sort of thing that you would play?
Used to be able to play a bit jazz drums. And but he's a very versatile drummer. He's been in loads of bands that have fused jazz with all manner of genres. I actually met him through doing this BBC podcast. We did an episode about the John Bapp album, Where Now, when the drumming on that is incredible. And the whole album started off with drums, and then everything was built around it. So I wanted to get drummers in to talk about it. I've got Adam Betts, who's an amazing drummer with Square Pusher and acts like that, to come in, and a solo artist in his own right. It's an entirely drum solo album that came out in 2016, which is incredible, called Colossal Squid. And Seb Rockford came in and did that episode as well, and there was like two drum kits set up with those two, and I was talking to them about the drumming on this album and how much we love it. It's like a bonus episode for the podcast. It's like a longer deep dive into... We've got these bonus episodes that are longer and investigate albums a lot more, and I met him through that. You know, he did the episode of the podcast and just played loads of different styles of drumming on it. I tried to show him one of my drum beats that I used to... The production team forced me to show him a thing I had done. And to my surprise, he really liked it and sent me a very nice email about it, because he said, I've been thinking about that drum beat you did a lot. And I just then confessed to him in the moment, I wrote that drum beat when I was in a band and obsessed with his drumming. And the beat is me copying him.
that's why he likes it.
That's probably why you like it, because it's me just trying to sound like you when I was 17. And then, you know, I just seized I already had the idea for this album in my head, and I thought, I'll ask him if he wants to do it. And I was astounded that he would have been my first choice anyway. I never thought I would have got him. And I can't believe he's going to do it.
But, wow.
You know, it's just a bit of fun for me.
Mm.
But that's why I'm talking about it so enthusiastically. This is so much fun.
So the new podcast is you're going to go through 50 of your 600 records.
Yeah.
With different comedians going to join you.
Yes.
You're going to have 25 guests, right? And they're all going to listen to two each.
Yeah.
Right.
So I've got, there's 50 episodes, 25 guests, two episodes each. And each episode, I've sent them an album in advance, which is one of my favorite albums, not just from 2016, but from all time. And they are going to come on the podcast and they're going to tell me what they think of it. And I'm going to tell them what I think of it and why I love it. And by the end of each episode, I'm going to see if they will admit that 2016 is the greatest year for music of all time. And so, you know, that gives the, you know, the listener, if it's an obscure album you've never heard before, you don't need to worry about not knowing what we're on about, because the other person I've got on as a guest, they've only just heard it for the first time.
Right, yeah.
So it's someone who loves something talking to someone who is a novice to it and who's new to it.
Sure. And do you, most of the 50, I know you've got some big ones, like Lemonade's going to be in there.
Yeah.
And Blonde's going to be in there.
Blonde's going to be in there, Black Star, Run the Jewels Free.
Some of the big stuff is going to be in there. But there's also some really obscure stuff, I presume. What is there in there that the album that you like that is from a Ned Flanders tribute band?
That is not in there.
Can you just explain what that record is? Because
album,
I read about that being in, because it's in the book, isn't
it?
And I listened to them today. I listened to a song by them called White Wine Spritzer.
Yep.
They are, to describe them, they're like a metalcore band.
Yes.
Called, what are they called?
They're called Oakley Dokley.
Oakley Dokley.
The album is called Howdily Doodly.
And they dress as Ned Flanders from The Simpsons.
Yep.
And all of the songs are based on him.
On Flanders. So they're singing in Ned Flanders quotes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Every song is named after something. But
it's quite it's well done, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
It's not, can clearly all play.
Yeah, the reason why it's like an album that I mention in the book and that I've talked about a lot is because it was definitely the tipping point where I realised, okay, this, I don't have any control over this project anymore. Like, I don't have any control over what I buy, because I have to own this album, because I can't, it's like I was saying earlier about that album we talked about, I can't say I know everything about, I know more about the music of 2016 than anyone else, and yet I didn't buy the Ned Flanders metal album. Like, you kind of have to own it.
Yeah.
So, like, there was albums like that where it's like, well, just without even listening to it, I have to own this album.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting experience, that album, because sometimes it comes on shuffle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is good. Well, who's this? And then I go over and like, oh no, it's Oakley Dokley. I'm enjoying them at face value. Like, it's a weird one, because it's like the very concept of it stops you from engaging with it on just a normal level.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is actually.
But they can play. Because have you heard that band Harry and the Potters?
No. You
know, Harry and the Potters.
I can guess where this is going, but no, I've not heard them.
They've been around a long time since maybe the first film came out.
Yeah.
So, what? 20 years maybe?
Right, yeah, yeah. So
and it's two guys. I think they're from Boston.
Uh-huh.
And they dress as Harry Potter, and all of the songs are about Harry Potter. But they are really DIY, really stripped down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sound like Beat Happening or something.
Right.
But it kind of make they're not brilliant. Like, it's brilliant in its for what it is, but not like Oakley Dokley, who, as you say, it comes on shuffle and you're like, this is a good band.
Yeah, yeah, this is actually a good band. I mean, they've changed members so many times, and all of them have nicknames like, you know, Head Ned, Dread Ned, and they've, every time they change a member, they have to think of a different word that's like one syllable and rhymes with Ned. But it's mad how like it comes up, and like I think it will never be one of my favourites just because I can't get past the Flanders thing.
Yeah,
But I'm delighted that it came out that year and that it was something. Cause, you know, ultimately, when you're talking to people about the albums that came out in 1 year, without playing, you know, there's some albums that are like really great indie albums that had to grow on me for a bit, and now I've got some of my favourites and I love them. But it's hard to like sell that to people.
Yeah.
And go, oh, there's this band and there's just really good guitar songs. But it's much easier to go, okay, there's this one album, and throughout the whole album is the sound of an active beehive for the whole thing. And it's this constant droning noise of all the bees. And over the top of it, a cellist has figured out that the bees are humming in the key of C. So they're playing in the key of C, the cello over the top of it. And then there's, by the way, I'm talking about the album B by One right now, which was originally an art installation. And it's the guys from Spiritualized did it. And like, there's more to talk about.
Yeah.
When you go on about those albums. And not necessarily your favorite ones, but they're really interesting albums that are worth listening to. And again, emphasizes the fact that, you know, we can, casting aside the kind of just fun little convincing people 2016 is the greatest year for music of all time, which is just a bit of a laugh, really, like trying to convince people of that. It's a fun little game. But really, the whole point is there is so much great music being made today and so much interest in music and inventive music. And, you know, for example, people are doing this stuff. People are, you know, harmonizing with bees.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a lot of stuff going on. People are still pushing things and being weird. It's not just all throwaway disposable stuff.
Because, I mean, you can't really buy 600 albums at any point and for them to all be of the same thing. It's really eclectic, your mix, from Bees to Ned Flanders.
Band. All the way from Bees to Ned Flanders.
Covering all the bases. Is there anything, just musically generally, not necessarily in this project, that you just won't touch? A strand of folk music or
something? I don't think I could say that, because it all depends on how it's done. And what I've been identifying more through this project is what I don't like within certain genres that turns me off. So, like, I'm more able to listen to songs now and say why I don't like them and what could be changed that would mean I would love it. You know, so it's like, for the most part, I don't like just big, chuggy rock music that is, like, very straightforward rock music, and I find it boring. But a lot of the time, it's not because of the music itself. It's because the production is always pretty predictable and just straightforward and inspired production. And the vocalists are often, you know, just sound. You can't pick them out of a lineup, just classic vocalists. And whereas actually, if the production was a bit more interesting and the vocalist was a bit more unique, then I'd probably love it. You know, so it's not the genre. It's the way that people do them. And for so much of it as well, it's just the production. Like, so much, I didn't care about production before this, and now I realise that actually there are certain styles of music, like rock music or folk music, where the more clean and glossy the production is, the more I don't like it.
Yeah,
and actually, I really like to just hear, I hear people properly creating and performing something. And although, you know, I like loads of electronic music as well. Samples and stuff, but you can still, it comes through.
Yeah,
you know, even if you can't hear someone playing something live, it comes through how much they genuinely are exploring a genre and care about it.
You should listen to Harry and the Potters. I think they're the band for you.
I think they're my favorite band.
As of now, they've got loads of albums as well.
I bet they have.
I mean, they
more
have
more so than the Harry Potter book.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been drinking a lot during this podcast because I've got a bad throat, so I've got to keep it lubricated. So I've gone through a glass of, like, what I think was carrot juice and a cup of lemon tea. I'm now dying for a piss, and also pretty concerned. I've been gulping into the mic the whole thing, so enjoy.
Anyway, good night.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.